It's time for Rebel Extra. This is your team, Las Vegas, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 364-1100. That's 364-1100. Now, live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Bernie Fratto and John Von Tobel.
Well, tonight featured another chapter in the Marvin Menzies era as the Rebels hit the road for Cedar City, Utah, in what would be their first road game of the season. As has been the case, before the seats were even warm, UNLV led 13-2, only to find their lead dwindle. But the undermanned Rebels still led by six at the half, 40-34. But in a sloppy game that featured a million fouls and some questionable officiating on both sides, in reality, the Rebels were never really in trouble, as they led the entire game, save for a scant 39 seconds, and closed out Southern Utah for their first road victory of the year by a final score of 89-81. Welcome back to another edition of Rebel Extra, the post-game show devoted to you, the fans and supporters of UNLV running Rebel basketball. Rebel Extra is brought to you by our proud sponsors, Angel Park Legacy in Durango Hills, OB Sports' most complete golf course experiences in Las Vegas, Diamondback Land Surveying from Brick Walls to the Taj Mahal. Diamondback Land Surveying are your land surveying experts. 8-Ball Bail Bonds. If you had more fun at the game than the law allows, call 8-Ball Bail Bonds to get you out of jail. And Pizza My Dear with a smoke and lunch deal. A 12-inch pizza for only $5. With two locations to serve you, go to pizzamydear.com. We come to you after every game this season, and we want to hear from you, Las Vegas, 364-1100. This is your team. Give us a call and be part of the action. Or you can text your thoughts at 69187. Please preface your text with ESPN. Now, before we go any further, let me introduce my broadcast team. To my left, turning all the dials, keeping us glued together tonight, is Nick Otomo. He'll also be taking your calls at 364-1100. And to my right, joined by the man for all seasons, you hear him every day on Cofield & Company, that would be John Von Tobel. JVT, they get it done. We probably figured they would, but some things to clean up. There can be no question. Some things to clean up before they head into a Pac-12 contest on the road Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Quite a few things that you can think of right off the top of your head. But when Uche Fabu is a late scratch because of an illness and you're short manned yet again, Southern Utah makes a run. I guess it's a good job to go in there on the road and gut out a close win. You turn to your two guards, Jovan Moring and Jalen Poyser.
Yep.
And they end up getting it done. So you're on the road, shorthanded. Late scratch, all in all, a decent win, but closer than you would have liked.
Heading into the game, there were keys. I always try to write down two or three things, thoughts, keys, yeah, whatever you want to characterize them as, heading into tonight's game. For me, the number one thing was don't allow Southern Utah to shoot threes. That, to me, was going to be their key weapon, other than Randy Onwisar, the transfer from Texas Tech, who's their all-everything. We ended up fouling out. Well, I can't say the Rebels were necessarily successful there because – the Thunderbirds made 11 threes. Take advantage, number two, take advantage, Rebels meaning, of their athleticism, their size, their length, force tempo, stay aggressive. I do think the Rebels did that.
Yeah, and they outscored them, albeit only by 4 points, but 4-0 in fast break, because I thought the fast break was going to be an issue for them just because Southern Utah was going to push tempo. They did a good job of controlling that. For me, one of the keys before the game was foul trouble, and especially for the forwards, right? Well, like a guy like Dwayne Morgan, you got to stay on the floor because they need you out there. And Dwayne stayed on the floor. Not only did he stay on the floor, he had a huge impact. Double-double, I believe a career high in rebounds is what Sandler kept saying on the broadcast. So a really, really good night for Dwayne, and the rest of the forwards actually stayed out of foul trouble and really, really performed well, Coupette and Baxter.
What was going on in your mind when Jalen Poyser got two fouls in the first 2 minutes?
I definitely thought it was going to be an issue because
so did I.
He provides, obviously, a good amount of scoring, and if they were going to start Southern Utah to get back into the game, if they didn't have Jalen on the floor to at least relieve some pressure and score some points to end a run or two, I thought it was going to get ugly for him. But Jovan stepped up. Jovan Moring had a great game. Not only did he close it out, but was just under control. Dished out some good dimes. Got about, five assists around halftime. Yeah.
There were a lot of sort of oddball, idiosyncratic things in this game. I mean, Jalen Poyser didn't get his first bucket of the game until 11:30 to go in the second half. And by the way, he'd already gotten four fouls by then. Right before the game, we found out Ochi Ofebu is sick. We already know that Christian Jones is in a boot, and Cheka Dembele doesn't seem to be getting on the floor anytime soon. So you start shorthanded. Ben Coupet gets his first start. Mm. Troy Baxter had a chance to shine tonight. I thought, again, he continually impresses me with just pure athleticism.
Yeah, he had really nice play down the stretch where Jovan drives to the basket, gets a pretty decent layup, but it ends up trickling out.
Right.
And who was there to put it back?
Boom.
With a monster
clean it
slam.
Right up.
Yep, it was
yep.
Troy Baxter. Now, he's definitely providing some better minutes. The more he gets acclimated with this team, it looks like, and he's comfortable coming off the bench, he's providing some really good minutes for him.
He's a guy that I hope sees a lot of floor time because as the season goes on, he will develop quickly and improve, and he's got a lot to build upon. I think he's blessed with a lot of natural ability, a lot of athleticism, and he seems to have a knack for making good decisions. A couple of other things that sort of stuck out to me. UNLV comes out with a box and one, and Todd Simon elected to come out with a man defense. Mm-hmm. And the Rebels open up a 13-2 lead before he switches to his zone.
Yeah, the zone is really – it's something that perplexes me a little bit because they look good against in some possessions, and then other possessions it really stifles them. And obviously it lets Southern Utah get back in this game and keep them in this game because they played it a lot.
Yeah, they did. All right, this is a caller show, Rebel Extra. As always, the callers are what make the show the most interesting. We want to hear from you, Las Vegas, 364-1100. We'll be taking your calls. Nick Otomo running the board tonight. And so without further ado, let's go out to the phone lines. We're joined by Kevin. Kevin, welcome to Rebel Extra. As always, you're the leadoff caller.
Hey, guys. I tell you what, that is not an easy place to play. I played a meaningless game up there in 1994, and within 3 minutes of the game, I couldn't breathe. It's 6,000 feet elevation. Right. It's not in a game like that, you just steal it, and you get back on Highway 15, and you drive home. That's all you can hope for.
I was mildly curious if the altitude might make a difference. I just felt that the Rebels' length, athleticism, size, quickness would be too much. And although the Rebels did get a little tired toward the end of the game, that's actually when they started to extend their lead. But the fact of the matter is, you're right, Kevin, the altitude was something the Rebels had to factor in.
Yeah, I mean, it happens, right? But you go up there, and like you said, I mean, the Rebels should have better players than Southern Utah. Todd Simon, he's just trying to get it going up there. It's a tough program to recruit to. I mean, it's 3 hours north of Las Vegas. They got to try to grab a player from that maybe won't go to BYU and bring him down to Cedar City and maybe a JC and an international player. But he'll try his best. That really is a tough job, Southern Utah. But when you're UNLV at this point, you take the W and you get back on the buses and you head home.
Well, it was a game they were supposed to win. The Rebels are now 5-2. Heading to Arizona State Saturday night. You would expect them to be 5-2 at this point. What we're going to find out Saturday night, Kevin, are some of the bugaboos John and I are going to talk about on the defensive side especially. Will those start to rear their ugly head against better competition Saturday night? Your final thoughts.
Like JBT said, Dwayne Morgan somehow needs to stay on the floor. You're almost better off, like, hey, if a guy's got you underneath the basket and you're thinking about jumping up in the air or fouling him, just let him go, man. You need that guy on the court for, 27 to 32 minutes this year. I mean,
and
bottom
he had
line,
33 minutes tonight.
Yeah, you never know who's going to be hurt or injured or ineligible. A guy like that, he has to learn from last year and say, you know what, if I have to give up a couple easy baskets, so be it. He needs to stay on the basketball court because if he's on the bench, he's as good as us. He's cheering and he's not doing anything, so he needs to stay on the court.
I think you'll get a lot of minutes. Thanks, Kevin. 33 minutes tonight, very active. Let's face it, there was nobody on Southern Utah's team that could guard him. As a matter of fact, the Rebels had some pretty impressive offensive numbers across the board. Six players in double figures, Dwayne Morgan, who Kevin just talked about, 19 points, 14 rebounds. He was a beast. But you know what impressed me the most? Got to the free throw line 10 times, made 7. Tyrell Green, 12 points, 9 rebounds. Jalen Poyser, 11 points, had 4 turnovers. Again, something to clean up before Arizona State. Javon Mooring, somehow he manages. It's amazing. I don't know if he's a stat stuff or what. He backs into 16 points tonight. 4 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know who to start with out of the guys you name. Like Tyrell Green, for example, he scores his 12 points. takes two threes, doesn't hit either one of them. And that's what he's actually been really good at, is drilling those threes. Look at Jovan Mooring, a good guy at, you know, getting pressure on the basket and actually pushing pace. And he did a good job today of settling down, not having as many turnovers. And in fact, guess what? He only had one. Dished out the assist, like I already mentioned. And again, down the stretch, that big three he hits with about, what, 90
seconds
left?
He's got the balls of a burglar.
Yeah.
You know what I do like about this team? Whether it's Clyburn or Mooring or Baxter, or certainly Poyser or Tyrell Green, they want the ball in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a place in heaven for guys like that. The problem is, too much of the time, the ball in their hands and the shot leaving their hand is too early in the shot clock. There are too many quick shots I saw tonight. Still not enough times on defense where they really could have gotten together and really broken down that Southern Utah 2-3 zone. Granted, it was a zone, but it wasn't a great zone because of the athleticism drop-off.
Yeah, and then that's why it goes back to, again, and there were some plays that they were drawing up. Like there was a Clyburn's three early in the first half, or in the second half,
That was an excellent possession.
Yeah, it was an excellent possession because, you know, Clyburn's down low, and then he just kind of leaks out to the corner. Nobody sees him. He gets it, and he hits a three. And Clyburn's a guy we haven't mentioned yet who had a great game and kind of had to slow down because of the fouls, ended up fouling out himself. But he hit some really clean shots, and he's looking healthier and healthier.
It's a good observation that Clyburn three, didn't Coupette get the assist? Or was that, it was a classic, what you would call the one extra pass offensive set. And for some reason, I seem to recall that Ben Coupette got the assist.
Might have, I said he might have. Yeah,
anyway, the point I'm making is your eyeballs told you the same thing my eyes told me. That was a good-looking possession.
Yeah, no, it was a really good possession.
And if you could repeat those, then you start to improve. Defensively, again, I'm concerned about this team. Look, we're coming off a nice win. They're 5-2, but I want to maintain my objectivity here. The Rebels' lack of awareness and recognition on defense has to get corrected. The schedule's going to start getting a lot tougher. The first thing you said when you came in the door, the easy dribble penetration that the Rebels' opponents have been able to prosecute against them, the lack of weak side help on backdoor cuts and pick-and-roll plays, which we haven't seen a lot of, but especially not closing out on the shooter. A lot of the threes that the Thunderbirds had tonight were as a direct result of certainly Tyrell Green, a couple of times Chris Clyburn, even Ben Coupette once, just simply not getting out, almost sauntering out, or not recognizing what was taking place and anticipating and getting a hand in the face of a perimeter shooter.
Yeah, the dribble penetration was most egregious to me because there were so many plays, as you mentioned, it was just straight obliteration by the SUU player.
By a guy that you could guard.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And the thing to me was, it wasn't just one player giving up the dribble penetration. One possession, it was Chris Clyburn. The next possession, it was Ben Coupette. I mean, there were just possession after possession of Southern Utah player either wide open in the lane for a pass or just attacking off the dribble and getting to the hoop.
Now, here's another thing that comes under the Department of Maturation and Recognition. When Randy Onwusar got his fourth foul, clearly he was half the team, and Todd Simon elects to stay in man defense, right? Why don't you go right at him to get him fouled out of the game earlier? I know it's real easy to sit here in the studio and be armchair quarterback, but these are things you have to recognize on the floor.
Well, especially with the way those refs were calling this game, too.
Horrible.
It was an odd game.
Exactly. Yeah. Do they get paid by the foul?
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's not a play.
It was a little skewed.
All the big scorers
had
a ton of fouls. Poyser had four. Onwusar had four.
I mean, look at you had two guys foul out, one for each team. And it was weird because in the first half, it seemed very Southern Utah friendly, and then they really tried to even it out, it looked like, in the second half. Yeah, the officiating was really off. But to your point, attack the basket, and it looked like with these officials, you're going to get the whistle.
With 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go, actually 2:50 to go in the half, when Jalen Poyser got his third foul, that was on a loose ball play, and I think that was a bad call. The ref thought he was clearing out. I don't think that was a particularly fair call. Be that as it may, the Rebels win 89-81.
Last point on the official, too. Just one more call that stood out to me. I thought Jovan Mooring, sometime in the second half, he did a great job of playing defense and getting up, and I thought he set his feet, and he got called for a block. And it was another possession.
Yes.
Just another example of the officiating.
Of overzealous officiating.
Yeah, but also of Jovan actually, to me at least, making the right play on the defensive end as well.
Let's go back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Steve. Steve, welcome to Rebel Extra. What are your thoughts tonight?
Oh, Steve, nothing.
Yeah, that was kind of an odd one there. That was a pretty good Marcel imitation. Hopefully, Steve will call back. Some pretty gaudy numbers, John, for the Rebels tonight. They shot 60% from the floor, 31 of 52. And they were consistent because they shot 61% in the first half. Tonight, they only took 14 three-pointers, made six for 43%, turned the ball over 13 times, out-rebounded their opponent 38 to 26, shot 27 free throws tonight. Not bad.
I've got 31 here.
You have 31?
Yeah. Which is look at that, even better.
It's by the end of the show, maybe they'll be up to 40.
Yeah, right. But it actually shows that at the end of the game, like we said, with Jovan and Jalen closing it out, they were attacking the basket.
They started every possession. And I think that's a byproduct of Coach Menzies saying, "Listen, this is a game where you've got to attack. You've got a size advantage. You've got a length advantage. You've got a quickness advantage. You've got an athleticism advantage. Take advantage," and they started to. All right, let's go back out to the phone lines. Let's try it again, Steve. Steve, thanks for checking into Rebel Extra tonight. What are your thoughts?
Hey, I'm sorry I got disconnected.
That's okay.
I just want to ask you a couple questions because I like listening to you guys. You're pretty in-depth about the game, and it sounds to me you were pretty right on. From what I could, I didn't get to see it, but I heard it on the radio. I used to play a lot of basketball. We traveled to Cedar City in high school and play in there. And I can remember it didn't take long. Our legs felt heavy. You think that could have had some of the problems with the defense, that the high altitude? I'm not sure, but I'll take your opinion on that. And another question I want to just what I'm looking forward to this season is the one thing that I noticed for 5 years with Rice, I hope you guys don't mind me saying this, is that his team seemed to start out strong, but for some reason they seemed to get not better, but worse. I didn't see the guys get better like I thought they would. And that's what I'm hoping most will happen here. I don't expect this team to win big, you know, with what Mendez was able to pick up. But what I want to see, are these kids going to coach and improve? Just like you guys talked about, communication on defense and all that stuff. Thank you.
All right, Steve, thanks for checking in. All right, the first question I'm going to ask, I'm going to answer facetiously. I think the altitude affected the Rebels late in the game. They got a little tired. A lot of guys were playing a lot of minutes. I don't think the altitude affected their defense unless they were lightheaded and they couldn't think because, JVT, there were too many times in the first half. Again, I'm repeating myself like a broken record. They were not closing out on the shooter and many times giving free pathways to the basket, not recognizing backdoor cuts, the occasional pick and roll, no weak side help. They're not aware. The recognition is missing. To answer to the second question, I would withhold all judgment on Marvin Menzies until the end of the year, but this is what I knew about him. He's a 9-year veteran coach. I think he's an exquisite teacher. He's very much in the teaching phase. And I'm sure, as you've observed, in the middle of the game, he is constantly communicating with players, coming off the floor, pointing things out, never missing an opportunity to communicate and deliver a message that a player can tuck away in their head and call upon later, whether it has to do with an offensive decision, a defensive decision, being in position, or shot selection, you name it.
Yeah, you talk about coaching or delivering your message. How many times, I think three times tonight, I saw him just getting into one of his players, and especially
one of the times it was Coupette. He pulled him out.
Coupette, Zion Morgan, there was a sloppy pass down the stretch, and it was very funny to watch Marvin just get really animated. Menzies, by the way, not Mendez.
Right.
But to watch him just get into Zion Morgan, it was very different from the Rice coach teams.
I think what the caller Steve was alluding to is that what became maddening in past years is as the season wore on, you would see the same mistakes over and over.
Yeah,
there didn't seem to be, unfortunately, the type of progress one would have hoped. And again, it's tough to glean how good this team really is right now because, for instance, we handled Cal State Fullerton in what was a fairly contested game here at the Thomas and Mack. Tonight they're getting blown out at home by Omaha. Omaha's a nice club, but a mid-range. So other than transitive property, you really cannot determine what this team's going to do in the future based on what they've done now. You'll take the 5-2 record, and one of the things that I think that we can't overstate enough is the fact that in April, in 6 short months, what Marvin Menzies was able to do in terms of recruiting and cobbling together a roster, it's truly competitive. The fair, you know, to be fair, yes, they're 5-2, and I've been critical in that we haven't played great competition, but they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Most of these games, they're winning handily, and they haven't really been seriously challenged to any great degree by some of these lesser teams.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little nip and tuck, I think, with Riverside for a little bit.
Didn't even win by double digits.
Yeah, but they ended up winning by double digits. No, you're right. As far as the team goes, no, I'm really impressed by this. Like you mentioned, the short time scale that Menzies had and the actual literal talent that you see on the floor when you watch this team, they have visible talent.
No question, John.
And I think, and we've seen in the first 7 games, there's been tiny improvements here and there. And Menzies even mentioned in the post game that they kind of took a step backwards when it comes to at least defense, on-ball defense and, you know, dribble penetration. But we've seen little improvements here and there, and we've seen players have tiny improvements here and there. So I think Menzies has shown he can get them to play a little bit better. At least he can continue to improve their game. Let's just put it that way.
He's John Von Tobel. I'm Bernie Fratto. The Rebels win tonight, 89-81, first road game, facing an old familiar foe by the name of Todd Simon. That'll run their record to 5-2. They've got Arizona State Saturday night, but we've still got some more show for you. Coming up on the other side, we're going to connect with Mark Anderson, the beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He covered the game tonight up in Cedar City. So when we come back, we'll get Mark Anderson on the line. Don't go away, folks. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Text the show by sending ESPN to 69187 or give us a call at 364-1100. This is Rebel Extra.
Back on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, John Von Tobel, Nick Atomo running the board tonight. Give us a call, 364-1100, or text at 69187 and join in the action. Preface your text with the ESPN. Rebels get it done tonight in Southern Utah, 89-81. At this point, we catch up with a gentleman who was at the game, the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, who was there courtside. Gentlemen, you know him as Mark Anderson. Mark, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, Bernie. How you doing?
Good. So the Rebels get it done tonight. And before we get into the thick of the game, question for you. We find out right before the game, Ochio Fabu was sick. Do you know the nature of his illness?
No, he missed practice yesterday. So I knew yesterday he was ill. So I knew there was a chance he wouldn't play tonight. Marvin Menzies said afterward that he was tempted a couple times to put him in, but thought better of it. But he thought he'd be fine by Saturday, Arizona State.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Is it the type of malady that is going to run its course quickly here, or as they head to?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I think part of it too is that, you know, Southern Utah is about 5,800 feet high, and you're worried about your breathing, just even if you're feeling well at this altitude. So to have someone who's ill, I think he was probably concerned from that standpoint, too, about running him out here and then really getting him run down.
So what did Marvin have to say? I'm interested in their defensive performance, especially dribble penetration.
Well, that's why he went to the zone. They were just getting killed off the dribble, and he knew he had to do something. So he went to the zone, because he said they just couldn't stop him one-on-one. And that turned out to be one of the key moves in the game is playing that zone at the end. Even though Southern Utah still managed to hit some threes over it, it still changed the complexion of the game at the end, because if he'd stayed in man, I mean, they would have just kept driving to the hoop. It was wide open at times. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we talked about that in the open of the show. Did you get a chance to talk to Todd Simon much, and what were his thoughts going into that game, into tonight's game? Did I overrate the fact he really wanted to win this game, or Did he speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he said the usual stuff about once the game begins, it's another game. But he said he still follows the program, and it's great to see his old players, and it sounded like he had nothing but good wishes for UNLV. I do think that he you know, had a little extra for this game personally. I think that's just human nature. I mean, everyone would feel that way. So, but you know, his team gave a pretty good showing, and I think he's got a lot to be pleased about tonight.
Dwayne Morgan had one of his better games as a Rebel. What did you think of his performance, Mark? And did you think it was maybe just a result of the matchup against really not a big Southern Utah team?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. He got a lot of really good looks. He played with a lot of energy, but he's been playing with a lot of energy all season. Yeah. So that's nothing new. But yeah, he really went hard after rebounds, managed to find a lot of good spots around the basket, took advantage of what was there. And, you know, I see this as sort of this UNLV team this season. Six players scored in double figures, and I just think it's going to be that kind of season where, you know, it's not going to be one guy. You know, Jalen Poizer obviously has been the leading scorer for most of the season, and he was in foul trouble tonight, and, you know, he I think he had, what, 7 points, 9 points? He didn't have many points.
Poizer had 11.
11 points.
Yeah.
He had 11 points. So, you barely even notice he's on the floor at times, so, because seven of those came on free throws. I just think that they don't really have one go-to guy, and I think that's the way Menzies would kind of have to coach his team, is he's going to try and look for matchups to best exploit, and in this case tonight, Morgan was the guy, but it's not like it was just him. I mean, you know, Mooring had 16, you know, Clyburn had 15, so, I mean, it was pretty well spread around.
They really seemed to get to the dribble penetration. UNLV did offensively down the stretch. Was that a matter of adjusting their offense through Menzies, or was it really the guys just kind of saying, hey, the way they're calling this game, it's getting down the stretch, let's attack and try to draw some fouls and get to the basket?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the combination of the two. They definitely adjusted to get those pick and rolls going so those guys could get that penetration. And I also do think they saw how the officials are calling the game. There was a stretch there, and this was on both sides of the court. If you drove down to the basket, you were going to get the foul. I mean, it was like about a 5 or 6 minute stretch. They were calling every drive a foul, or at least it seemed that way. So I think, you know, you see how they're calling the game. Like, you take advantage of it, and so that's what they did. And UNLV shot, you know, 31 free throws tonight.
They did. We're wrapping it up with Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review Journal. Mark, final thought before the Rebels head to Arizona State. What concerns do you have? They are 5-2. I feel like some of this is a false sense of security. I give the Rebels top credit for dispatching of the teams that they're supposed to, but I see lack of awareness and recognition on defense and still too many quick shots on offense, too many bailouts by the three. They shot the lights out tonight, so everything has a tendency to look a little better. Do you have any concerns, or are we just going to ride this wave and maybe, you know, but just by sheer energy, the Rebels will compete?
I think Arizona State's going to be a real challenge. I don't know what the spread will be, but I imagine you'll be would be a somewhat substantial underdog. Their defense is lacking a lot of times. If you let Southern Utah beat you off the dribble, it's a cause for major concern.
Right, I mean, exactly.
What's a team like Duke and Kansas going to do to you? So, that's a problem. I don't know that's going to go away. And the outside shot, I after watching the last game against Western Kentucky, it just struck me this is largely a jump shooting team. And they may pull out some games you don't expect them to pull out just because they're hot that night. But I can see them giving away games that you wouldn't expect them to lose because they can't hit anything. So I kind of think it's just going to be, you know, show up and see which Rebels team is shooting that night.
Yep.
Now, tonight they only really took 14 threes. So they didn't really go crazy on three, and they shot, you know, almost 60% from the floor. So,
they did.
I mean, they shot unbelievable tonight. But, I mean, they're not going to shoot 60%, obviously, every game. But, you know, I just think, you know, like the TCU game, they couldn't make anything. So I just think it's just going to be one of those teams that it's going to be really unpredictable, and in some ways it's going to be fun to watch because when they get on their rolls, I mean, then you feel like they have a chance against almost anyone who's not, you know, named Duke or Kansas or one of those type of teams.
Well, it'll be fun Saturday night. Mark, thanks for making time tonight. Let's catch up again from Tempe after the game Saturday.
All right, sounds good. I look forward to it. Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you. It's Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, the beat writer. He'll travel with the team and cover every game. I agree with what he said from the standpoint of this is who this team is, and whether it's Arizona State or TCU or Western Kentucky or Southern Utah or Duke, this is who they're going to be. They're going to get their shots. And by the way, John, before I allow you to respond here, I want to get your take. Marvin Menzies seems to be very pragmatic about that in the sense that, look, you're not going to get dunks all the time. You're not going to get layups all the time. You're not going to get shots in the paint all the time. So sometimes you're going to have to rely on the perimeter game. The question is, do they settle too early, too often for some of those long-range shots?
Yeah, that's my sticking point is you don't want to just rely on the jump shots. You at least want to keep running your offense so that you attempt to get shots at the rim, right? I mean, that was one of the issues that we saw against TCU in the whole what are they doing against the zone was it was just a lot of perimeter movement and then hacking up jump shots. That's why I would think you would still, because at the end of this game, they showed that once they start attacking, right, they can get to the basket. They have guys who can do it.
Yes.
So I think they might still be evolving a little bit.
If they can get down low and draw contact, they've got enough athletes. And like you said, they got to the line 31 times tonight, which is a huge improvement over the game against even Western Kentucky, which was a win when the Rebels didn't shoot their first free throw until 8 minutes and 18 seconds to go in the game. Mm-hmm. By the way, big night, I think, for the Mountain West Conference tonight as Colorado State heads into Colorado. Colorado's been a fixture in the tournament the last two or three years, and they win 72-58. Meanwhile, Boise at home against a very good SMU team. Granted, Larry Brown's not there anymore, and they're on probation, but they come away with a 71-62 win, Boise State does. Wyoming dispatches of Denver 82-70. New Mexico 85-55 over Abilene Christian. Fresno State over Menlo 80-67. By the way, I believe Menlo's near Stanford. We heard that. I love that geography lesson we got. And JVT, the Air Force game is still in progress, I believe, at New Mexico. Do you have an update on that?
Actually, it looks like New Mexico State's going to win that one. They're up 76-70, but there is 9 seconds left. So Air Force has a shot, but it looks like New Mexico's got at least a somewhat comfortable lead.
You ever notice, though, when conference play starts, everything just looks totally different?
Oh, of course.
The teams are more locked down and engaged. They seem to have UNLV scouted well. I still can't get over how conference play started last year on December 30th when Fresno State came in here and stole that first conference game, and it just seemed to set the tone for the remainder of the conference season. So it's never too soon, at least for me, you and I, as fans, to start to look ahead to the first conference game, which will be at Colorado State. You know, Larry Eustace will always be prepared. Mm-hmm. You got to give it up to the Rams. That's an impressive victory going into Colorado tonight, winning by 14.
No, and Menzies mentioned it too. Any road game is really impressive, but when you do it against a rival and against a decent Pac-12 team, it's going to be good.
That's been in the tournament the last couple of years.
Yeah, so that's a really solid win, especially for the Mountain West, you know, on the surface, you know, sure, and on the national view. A decent day. And with Boise, by the way, they go and play Oregon on the road, and they actually competed with them on Monday.
That's right.
It was a 10.9-point win for Oregon. So
Oregon's ranked, 13th or 18th, and they won big tonight by about 30. All right, before we wrap it up, John, looking ahead to Arizona State, we'll face Bobby Hurley. Arizona State has had the Rebels' number the past few years, whether it was Deontay Burton or Nate, pick your poison. It's been it's been rough sledding against the Arizona State Sun Devils. The Bobby Hurley's troops are 4-3 so far this year. They've beaten Portland State, Cal Poly, Tulane. They did get hammered by Kentucky, but you throw that completely out the window. As a matter of fact, it's kind of unfortunate that the Rebels have to face the Sun Devils next. The one thing we know about Bobby Hurley, they're going to make UNLV work for everything. They'll contest every shot. They'll pressure the passer. They won't allow the Rebels to get free catches in space. They'll collapse. When Dwayne Morgan drives to the hole, you'll see Arizona State collapse. Again, recognition. Will Dwayne Morgan have the awareness to kick the ball out to perhaps an open shooter? The Rebels are going to face a real stiff test Saturday night. And if they manage to go into Tempe and steal a win, then that's going to be an extreme eye-opener for me. I don't expect that to happen, but you still got to play the game.
Yeah, of course. I don't really expect it to happen either. It's a tough road trip for them. And by the way, Arizona State coming off of just a tail whooping.
Yeah, Kentucky, 46.
Yeah, 115-69. So you don't think they will be motivated to bounce back from that? And I think Hurley is. He's a decent coach, and as you mentioned, he's had success against UNLV. It'll be a tough game for him. But if they can shore up defensively and actually improve on that, then obviously then they have a shot.
Right, and it's, you know, Mark Anderson brought up a good point. He didn't say it in this way, but he implied that when your shots are dropping, everything looks good. And there can be no question the shots were dropping tonight. The Rebels, 61% in the first half, 60% for the game. They only shot 14 three-pointers. That's true. Got to the line 31 times. All across the board, offense, everywhere you look, six players in double figures. They put up 89 points.
Yep. Offensively, not really an issue tonight again. And with Uche back, you know, the offensive performance can only get better. Obviously, Uche was finding his game last time we saw him. He's getting better and better each and every game, and he'll just provide another guy and another hardy body, let's just put it that way, a thick body, to sit there and attack the rim and actually provide some rebounds too.
All that is true. Final thoughts, John, before we close down the show?
You know what? Decent win when you're on the road and you get a late scratch like that, but defensively something worrisome to watch out for because we saw it at the beginning of the year. We saw it in exhibition. So hopefully that's something that's not going to follow this season or this team all season long.
I think it's going to continue to be a work in progress, and I do think you'll see improvement. The question becomes, how will that improvement manifest itself when you get into much better competition, which we're going to see not just the Power 5 conference teams with Arizona, Duke, Kansas, and Oregon coming up, but as you get into the Mountain West as well.
Yep, and I'm excited for this stretch. You're going to see some good opponents, so you'll actually be able to see how this team stacks up.
Be a lot of fun. Yep. All right, folks, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of Rebel Extra. On behalf of my broadcast team, Nick Otomo, John Von Tobel, I'm Bernie Fratto, bidding you good night. Next up for the Run of Rebels, Saturday, 5 p.m. tip on the road in Tempe against the Arizona State Sun Devils and Bobby Hurley. In the meantime, tonight's final score, UNLV Run of Rebels, 89, Southern Utah Thunderbirds, 81. Rebels run the record to 5-2. We'll see you Saturday night, folks. In the meantime, drive safely, have fun, and go Rebels.